Let's go on with Essa, please.
So I think some folks are going to join me, and I'll get the PowerPoint up.
This is Jay.
Jay.
Perennial topic.
When's lunch?
After this, we will break.
That's clear, right? I'm being punished for misbehaving.
We will get through this, and then we will break.
Don't get hangry, Dr. Stein.
I think I'm on now. All right. So there are five items that we would like to go through with you today. We'll try to move forward on them quickly. And the first is a discussion of 7% set aside. And Dr. Sprenkel is here to talk with us about that.
Good afternoon, President Smerich, Dr. Finn, other members of the board, and Dr. Salmon. I am Marcia Sprenkel, the Title I Program Improvement Director. I want to thank you for giving me this opportunity to discuss the Title I set-aside for school improvement. I would like to start by asking, what is the Title I set-aside? What is it? I know you're wondering about it. The Every Student Succeed Act requires each state to reserve 7% of the top of its Title I allocation, Part A, for intensive, innovative school improvement work. The funding is distributed to the LEAs that serve large percentages of schools implementing comprehensive and targeted support school improvement plans. These schools demonstrate the greatest need and have the strongest commitment to using the funds to enable the lowest performing schools to improve student achievement and other student outcomes. This graph depicts the historical trend line for Maryland's funding over the past 4 years. Intensive school improvement work, okay, is what this graph depicts as far as the funding is concerned. As you can see, we have not seen a large increase in funding over the past 4 years. The set-aside funds can be used for either formula, competitive, or hybrid grants. Most states are using the set-aside for competitive grants. However, Maryland cannot use the set-aside for competitive grants due to the Protect Our School Act. New York will be using a similar model that is similar.
Yeah,
to
wait.
Is that right?
Demonstrate that legally, please.
Yeah. I'm sorry?
That restriction that you just alluded to.
Yeah,
unpack it.
Yeah, a lot of us have spent time memorizing the Protect Our Schools Act, and I just cannot remember any provision that would stop us from doing a competitive grant.
Right. There are, and I could get that for you, and I can provide you with that information. There are a couple lines that address the Protect Our School in the Protect Our School Act that prohibit Maryland for actually administering or allowing competitive grants.
Okay.
We'll get more on it.
Okay, please.
We'll need to see that.
We can definitely find it.
The act that goes on giving.
Right. But the point of this is that that other states are using competitive programs.
Yes.
Okay.
So if you want the language
quickly,
it says the departments shall distribute federal funds for the implementation of plans under the subsections, which are specifically for the CSI and the TSI, the schools of this section, based on formula and driven by the identified needs of each school identified by the department. So it does say in the language of Protect Our Schools Act that it is by formula.
Could you read that
read
one more
again?
Time?
I'm sorry, we missed that.
So it says the department shall distribute federal funds for the implementation of plans developed under subsections A1 and B1. And these are specifically for our lowest performing schools and the targeted performing schools of this section, based on a formula and driven by the identified needs of each school identified by the department.
Why can't we define the formula as the result of a competitive grant?
No.
And which?
So we did have a discussion back months ago when we were involved in this, and we did look at language of competitive at that time. I can't tell you what month, but we did have guidance based on Protect Our Schools Act at that time that we could not go with a competitive for those funds and that we had to go by formula. So Liz, I think, advised us at that time.
Some things I remember, sometimes some things I don't, but the term formula really does intend to apply across all of the schools that are in those categories, as opposed to, you know, you do a competitive grant and then you do a formula on top of the grant. It doesn't all go together, David.
And which fund specifically did that clause refer to that you just read?
Well, I think it is referring to CSI and TSI schools, the lowest 5%, and those with student groups that are equivalent to that.
But which money was it referring to?
Federal funds.
Federal funds.
All
federal Title
funds?
I funds.
Title, all Title I funds?
There was discussion at the time, not just of set-aside, but of Title I funding, which is what got the discussion, that it would be based on the needs assessment, based on information that would make it competitive. Based on that, I think that was at the time that our Protect Our Schools Act was being developed, ultimately then passed, and this is the language that's included in that.
Because I wanted to use these funds for incentives, and I was told you're absolutely not. So anyway.
I'm confused. The state law, and this I'm asking, not saying, but has to respect federal law. Federal law on the funds spent on comprehensive intervention, and I do know this very well, depends on a number of things. One of them, for example, is that the monies can only be spent if the district, and this is approved by the state, uses evidence base for the funding intervention. And those evidence base in this case of comprehensive intervention must be tier 1, 2, or 3 evidentiary base. So if a district were to ask for funding from the set aside that was for an intervention in its 5% lowest performing schools, which was not evidence-based or was tier 4 evidence-based, it would in fact be illegal for the state to give the district that money. So I don't see how state law can overturn federal statute.
State law is, okay. Federal funds can be withheld from a state if the state does not comply with the requirements around federal law. A state can choose not to do exactly what the federal law says, and then the federal government can come in and say, I'm going to take away some of your dollars. That's the only stick they have. Now, within the context of this, and again, I'm just talking off the top of my head, if a school system comes in and says, I'm asking for the 7% set aside because I'm a comprehensive needs school, and I'm going to put in a program that's the stupidest thing on earth, these people are not going to approve that.
Right.
They're going to say, no, you can't do that. You need to do X, Y, and Z. But here's the amount of money you're going to get based on the formula. So you got to split them apart, I think, and say there's money. The money's going to flow by formula. The requirement of the program is defined by federal law, and these are the kinds of things that you can do. Is that making sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, then, helpful. Thank you. Okay, so pretty much all these things that other states are doing, trying to give more resources to districts and schools that are trying to do creative things. We cannot do. We have to spread it around by formula.
Yes, but I think to the point that Liz was making, they can, we don't have to approve everything they're going to use. And so hopefully they can do creative things that meet their needs assessment that will address the needs of the school. But it, they do, as Liz said, have that pot of money.
So the money can't go somewhere else, but the criteria by which you decide whether to approve the flowing of those dollars to that district.
Absolutely.
Correct.
I would also add, though this may get complicated, you love this, don't you? That there is discussion at CCSSO about the authority of states to be stricter than the minimum federal requirement. And it is my understanding that USDOE has no problem with this. So, for example, and this may be particularly relevant since we're not able to be in the business of competitive grant making in this instance, there is nothing to prevent a state saying that the intervention must meet tier one or two.
That's correct.
Right? Rather than tier three. This is important because for the audience, tier three research-based interventions merely need to show a correlation research. That is, they need to show that if something happened, something else happened that was correlated. Tiers one and two are causal. That is to say, there is research to say, if you do this, it causes this improvement. So that faced with the restriction that has been explained based on the Protect Our Schools Act, we could decide as a board to be stricter in the release of funding against a higher criteria for the quality of the intervention.
Yes. I think that's our intent.
Yes. I think the next slide will...
That wasn't something we were going to wait for CCSSO to say you can do it. That's our intent, but is to make sure, because my frustration and my concern about being able to do incentive grants is I don't want to continue to give schools these huge amounts of money and we don't see any improvement.
Right.
But go on to the next slide, because I don't think it does say what you just think it says.
Okay. The Maryland State Department of Education recommends a two-part comparison formula that consists of a fixed per pupil allocation for all CSI schools based on student enrollment. Additional funding, including the increased Title I set aside, along with any other available funding that may be identified, will be awarded to schools in which annual progress has been met, exceeded, and or school has demonstrated progress. This is contingent upon available funding. The two-part formula cannot be determined as of yet until Maryland has been awarded the Title I Part A allocation for FY19.
So aren't you making it competitive, the second part?
I'm sorry?
Doesn't that make the second part of the funding competitive?
It's a tiered hybrid. Based on,
I mean, I may be for it. I'm just trying to understand how it doesn't contravene the Protect Our Schools Act.
Seems like it's not formula.
Can I ask the general counsel?
Can I have some time to think about this? Because
on its face,
I'm going to need some time to take a look. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Dr. Lee.
I just have a question. Is it possible, and maybe there isn't a case like this, but I'm just thinking, if there's a school that is really poorly functioning, is it possible to put the money to have those people, those kids, go to other schools? I mean, public schools, right? And
that would be a different law that we just got away from, but that was part of No Child Left Behind in terms of they had that ability, but we don't have that now with
that. We don't have that program.
Yeah, and Protect Our Schools.
Right.
Forbids that from...
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Okay. So we will continue to spread this money around by formula to all schools that are in this category.
But we will find out some more information
about the second part.
That second bullet. We have to
we'll
get permission.
We'll figure that out. Right.
We have to get a legal...
Right. We'll be back on that.
We'll be back.
But the majority of it will be formula, and we'll figure out that it has to be done with lots of criteria for what the money is used for. That we can control.
The tier one, tier two, tier three is
good
really
way to go.
Yeah, really interesting. If that's in federal statute.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, it makes a real difference because almost anyone can find a correlational study to support almost any intervention.
Well, we have a lot of them out there that are doing their own research.
Right, right. Whereas Tier 1 and 2 are actually quite tough standards to meet. It's either a randomized control trial or it's a quasi-experimental matched pairs.
Yep.
There are plenty of interventions that do meet those standards, but they are much, much smaller as a number than the thousands that meet the correlational bar.
Great.
Okay, Mary.
Okay. All right, we're good. So we're going to move forward. Second item is updating the interim and long-term goals. And annual measurable objectives were set in the areas that you see before you and have to be part of our plan. We have approval that our goal would be to cut in half the number of non-proficient by 2030. That was approved. But we provided at the time the 2015-16 data, and we promised to update that data with 2017. So you don't have this as a slide, but you should have received a chart that has the new data. And what you might not have in front of you is the data that we submitted, and I will tell you it's very close. There's not significant changes. But we will be forwarding this to U.S. Department of Education as an amendment because they are anticipating, based on our plan, that we would update that data, which we have done with the newest PARC performance data, the newest ALT data. All of that has been added, and we will be including that as an amendment to our plan. So that's really the purpose of this item, is to share that new data with you. The third item, moving forward, unless you slow me down, is English language proficiency exit criteria. Here is another item that we promised in our plan, and U.S. Department of Ed, actually, when they did the first call with us, they said, you're going to be back before us with an amendment to that. As you know, we use Access for ELLs 2.0, which impacted the data when WIDA did standard setting. And when they did standard setting, it basically really increased the ability, or made it harder, let's say that, to made it harder to get a 3, 4, or 5 on the WIDA. And therefore, the exit criteria, we are revising in our plan to go from a 5.0 to a 4.5. This is another item that we have to do as an amendment. We did actually use the 4.5 as in a trial. We did it as a draft. And in fact, for the past year, based on that standard setting. And the reason is because at 4.5, the students that exit there are equally probable of being as successful as non-EL students. So we are doing what we promised to do, which is resetting that exit criteria and letting you know, and we will put forward that. We actually have put it out there and have gotten no comments on it. We've gotten no questions.
I'm sorry, can I go back to the target projections?
Yes.
Can you just overall tell us, how does the 2017 baseline compare to the previous baseline?
Okay.
Is everything pretty much the same, or has
sure? That's what I said. It's about. It's very close, and I've lost my sheet for what it is now. I can let you know. In English language arts, for all students, the 2017 was 41.5. It's now, I think. Can you?
It's 42.63.
There you go. And I will also tell you, the 2030 was 69.7. Dr. Salmon?
71.32.
Yeah. So the targets are very close. They have not changed considerably based on adding the 2017 data. Changed a little, but not considerably. And they are in our plan. Thank you. It's in my
The math.
I will also give you the math. The math target, the baseline for all students is 36.1. And the baseline now, so it was 36.1, it's now 35.6. And the 2030 target, which was 66.9 is now 67.8. So just a few changes. Close. And I've looked at all of them.
I need to push us along, if
I'm
you don't mind.
I'm pushing you along.
5 more minutes, and then we got a break.
Okay. So now we're looking at the school climate survey, and basically this is coming back to you from last month.
Great. So we had a question last month about the information that schools would get as a result of their school climate survey. The school climate survey has 4 domains: safety, school environment, engagement, and relationships. Each of them has between 2 and 4 topics. So the information that we want to report to schools is an overall score for the entire climate survey, scores for each domain, those 4 large domains, scores for each topic, and descriptions of what each topic measures. And so here you have an example of the safety domain and the 4 topics within the safety domain. So for example, a school would get their subscore on the substance abuse topic. Substance abuse measures the degree to which students use or try alcohol or drugs in and out of school, and whether it is easy for students to use or try alcohol or drugs at school without getting caught. So they have a breakdown of what that score means, and they get their subscores and their score for each topic, domain, whole thing.
Your example, obviously, is based on a student survey.
Yes, that's correct.
So who all is being surveyed? Let's go back to who the survey is being applied to.
The survey is being applied to students and educators. And on the educator version of this report, same pieces of information, just the domains and topics will be described with respect to the educator responses as opposed to the student responses.
And then those 2 different surveys are in some way combined in terms of the scoring system here?
That's correct. And you're also correct in saying in some way combined. We're running the field test this year and then doing data analysis over the summer to determine what the most valid way of doing that combination is. But since it's a brand new survey and we don't have data, we need to run that analysis on field test data.
We also talked at the last meeting about some sort of secure arrangement in which members of the board
getting
could
it in a few minutes.
Okay.
Getting a copy.
Okay. Good. All right. Thank you.
Okay. The final piece that's left over from last time is the standard setting for chronic absenteeism and just more general methodology for how to assign points to a indicator where we're not necessarily saying if you're 60% proficient, we give you 6 points out of 10. So again, this is your chronic absenteeism distribution of data we brought to you last time, that we wanted to set the low point at 60% of students not chronically absent, because at that point we saw a very distinct change in the school, in the achievement of the students. So this is our proposal, and this is what we brought last time, is in between that high point of 60% and that low point, go back, and that the high point, sorry, of 96% and the low point of 60%, that points are assigned in even increments in that interval. So what to get out of this picture is that all of the blue boxes are the same width. If you go to the next slide, here's what it looks like in terms of points. The intervals between accountability points are the same, no matter if you are on the low end or the high end. If your current score is, if you're on the left side of that, you know, towards the low end, it is 2.67 percentage points in the interval. If you're on the high end, 2.67 percentage points on the interval. The blue boxes are all the same width. The board asked us to look at different ways of allocating those points. So what to get out of this graph is that the blue boxes are big and the purple boxes are small. So one option is that you use smaller intervals close to the high end and lower intervals closer to the low end. So in this case, there were 2 additional decisions made. The first decision was to set a third cut point at 80%. Now, there's no reason, there's no correlation or match between that cut point of 80% and school achievement. We did look at that, but the suggestion was 80%. So that was one decision that would have to be made if you decided to not have even intervals. The second decision that would have to be made to not have even intervals is, in this case, we decided to allocate one-third of the points to the low part, to the blue boxes, and two-thirds of the points to the high boxes, to the purple boxes. Again, that decision doesn't bear out in the data. But in order to say we want to have smaller steps towards the high end and larger steps on the low end, we had to pick some way of distributing the points. So if you go to the next slide, what this means is that the intervals are not the same. The blue interval, if you are on the lower end of the distribution, in this case, in order to gain an accountability point, you have to move up the difference is 4.4 percentage points on the left-hand side. And on the right-hand side, the difference between accountability points is only 1.8 percentage points. We are also asked to look at this in reverse. So here, the blue boxes are small and the purple boxes are big. Same allocation, same decisions of choosing that 80% split. In this case, two-thirds of the points are in the blue and one-third of the points are in the purple. And if you go to the next slide, again, you can see that the intervals are not the same size. Smaller, in this example, smaller intervals on the left-hand side, each accountability point is a difference of 2.2 percentage points. And on the right-hand side, the purple, each accountability point is equivalent to 3.6 percentage points in the chronic absenteeism rate. So we were asked to look at those. If you go to the next one. Our recommendation is to maintain option one, which was points are assigned at regular intervals. We wanted to remind you of the standard setting team developed their guiding principles for this process. Set as few cut points as possible in the absence of data and or research on where the cut points should be, and to create an assignment schema that incentivizes improvement without putting a cliff or a bubble. So an example of a cliff in this case would be an 80% cut point, where for making progress on one side of the cut point, you get a lot of gain from that. Making progress on the other side of the cut point, you don't get as much gain as you did before. And options two and three require setting additional cut points, choosing an allocation rule, that two-thirds, one-third rule, and it creates incentives, different incentives for growth on either side of the cut point. So we are recommending option one, points are assigned at regular intervals. All the blue boxes are the same width.
Great. Thank you so much. Questions, comments, motion? Yes.
So earlier when you were speaking, did you say that there was no, correlation with the 80%, that it was just sort of like an arbitrary, just it's on there?
That's right. The 60%, there is, so where the red box starts, right? Mm-hmm. The 60%, there is a correlation. There was a distinct change in our data, in our achievement data. Mm-hmm. Once schools were above 60% of students not chronically absent, then their achievement scores went up. And so that's why we chose the 60%, because it bore out in the data. There was no additional point at which school achievement changed. So 80% was a suggested place to put that cut point, but it does not bear out in the achievement data.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. I'm in favor of this. Thank you for all the work that you've done on it. I think at this point we're just trying to, I can make an argument on either side of just about all these options. I think we've gotten as close to some decisions as possible. Yeah.
Go with the recommendation.
Yeah. Does anyone else have thoughts?
I move that we accept option one.
Second.
Okay. So there's a motion from Dr. Guyton, second from Dr. Steiner. Any further discussion? Yeah, let me just reiterate this. We pushed you hard on this, and thank you for coming back and continuing to think about it. This is imperfect, but really close to as we can get, so thank you.
Thank you.
Any further thoughts? Okay, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Great. Terrific. Thanks. Yeah. All right.